Okay, now enough spoken about virtualization. Let us now understand the benefits of globalization. Again, an important topic, nothing much to say here. Why globalization and what are the repercussions? So the first thing is collaboration, right? So technology brings the world closer. We saw this in the COVID times where we used multiple collaborative tools like Teams meeting, virtual meeting rooms, etc., etc. And as we say, we live in a borderless world, which means that we don't need to be present physically, but you could be present virtually. The second point is multinational presence. So many organizations establish the global development centers or tie up with IT companies across the globe, but ensure that they have the same experience that you get if you are present locally. And this is possible only through the advent of technology, things like connectivity. While a multinational company would have multiple different offices across the world, it becomes important that these offices are connected through a seamless network. Now, we all know internet is a big network by itself, but generally these companies get connected through something called as MPLS, which is multi-protocol label switching. So these are dedicated networks connected for office connectivity, right? And that's one of the reasons how you could manage seamless video conferencing, seamless data transfer between offices. An important concept here is follow the sun. Now, you would see this term being used and abused in the services industry. Many organizations want their customers to get the best service experience. So they say that we give you 24/7 support. Now, 24/7 support means obviously having resources 24/7. More importantly, what it means is you could leverage resources from one part of the globe at a certain point in time, and then at another part of the globe during the other times. So just to give you an example, assuming that you have a banking unit, that banking support unit or a call center that operates 24/7. To make efficient utilization, what you could do is IST, that is Indian Standard Time, you could have the resources between say 9 to 5 or 9 to 6 and shift the operations from India to say US East, where they are just starting their day. So 6 p.m. in India time would be 8:30 a.m. in US time. So what happens is the moment the resources or the people from US are up and running, you would have the people from India going to rest. So that's follow the sun. So the whole idea is to give a seamless service experience to the customers, where customers can log their complaint 24/7. So that's follow the sun, which means workflows pass between different work sites in different time zones, but ensuring that the responsiveness is delivered throughout and a seamless experience is given to the customer. There is another concept called as follow the moon, which means you schedule work during the nighttime hours. Now, what happens is, and earlier we used to have this, or maybe even some of the service providers currently have it. You have certain plans or certain mobile plans during the day where, say, the data usage is limited. But during the night, you have unlimited data usage kind of a thing. Because during the daytime, the usage would be at its peak. But during the night time, the usage would generally be less, and hence companies, kind of mobile companies, come up with these kind of plans. So follow the moon mentions that you schedule your work during the local night time to optimize the data center running costs, because the data center would not be running during the night time, and hence you could optimize that particular cost. And the last is remote work culture. So obviously, I mean, working from home, remote working is the next thing, is the new normal, as I like to say, right? So efficiently working from home, offering flexibility is something which we are seeing currently, and all facilitated by technology. Okay, we now discuss a very important topic, which is cloud computing. Now, I'm sure you would have heard the news, heard the reports, and it's everywhere on the internet that cloud computing is the new technology, the new thing that is in the market. Now, when I say the new thing, it's no longer new because it's been used since a long time. But it's increasingly gaining popularity in today's scenario. So what exactly is cloud computing? Now, things that you can touch and feel are physical in nature, right? Everyone knows that. When it comes to cloud, you see things like storage in the cloud. And we've all been using our email accounts, say the Google storage, etc., for a pretty long time. So what is Google storage? It's basically a virtual form of storage which is stored somewhere and we don't know where, correct? And it's stored on the cloud. So Google Cloud Storage is the easiest form of storage that anyone can relate to, right? And that gives a good example or a good platform to understand what is cloud computing. So cloud computing basically, any IT system which gets stored virtually in some other part, not physically present in the same part as you are, is cloud computing. Easiest example, say for example, you are booking an airline ticket, right? You don't know where the servers are. That's a form of cloud computing. Google storage, Google Photos, you get 15 GB of free space. Do you know where that storage is located? No, so that's a good form of cloud computing. Similar to that, companies even store and even process the stored data in the cloud, which means the earlier form of servers that used to be on-premise, the entire large machines, the physical machines which used to be in the data center, now are shifted virtually to the cloud. And then it gets accessed only through a access mechanism, which could be internet, which could be a dedicated connectivity. I mean, that's a different topic. But at the very basic level, what you need to understand is every storage, compute, which gets stored in a virtual data center, not a physical data center, but a virtual data center, is cloud computing. So as I said, it's an emerging and a significant technological advancement with benefits like server utilization, dynamic capacity allocation, and we'll look at some of the benefits. And there are three popular forms of cloud computing. The first is infrastructure as a service, the one that you see on the second. Now, what does infrastructure as a service mean? Now, it means that a company like, say, Google data center or Microsoft Azure data center or Amazon Web Services. So these are popular cloud service providers. So these companies provide you with resources, and these are physical resources stored on the cloud for you to access it. So that is infrastructure as a service. So there'll be components like servers, storage, and multiple different services like, say, gateways, load balancer, etc., etc. So these are services, a point-in-time services, which can be used on a consumption basis. So that's available on the internet. So this is infrastructure as a service. You don't get the application, you don't get the end-to-end managed service support from the cloud provider, but these are more of infrastructure related. So that is infrastructure as a service. The second is platform as a service. Now, what does this mean? It means that there are, obviously the infrastructure comes here. Along with the infrastructure, there is an underlying platform software layer. Right now, this is, mind you, this is not the end software that you are deploying for your business use. Say, for example, you are using accounting software, right? So the accounting software is not exactly a part of platform as a service, but the underlying platform utility, say if you are using a Java runtime environment, then that runtime environment would be given to you, but not the application that provides the runtime environment. So that gets included in platform as a service, right? So simple to understand is infrastructure as a service plus some bit of software governance is platform as a service. And the third and the most important is software as a service, in which you get to use the end software. So which obviously includes infrastructure as a service and platform as a service. And you get the end application to consume. For example, you see certain applications which are provided for your end use. So organizations don't really have to worry about infrastructure, nor platform, nor anything else. They just have to consume the software. So that's truly software as a service. Companies don't really have to get into the hassles of uptime understanding about how the application is hosted, etc., etc. It's the simplest form of consumption of a software. And this is the most popular form of cloud computing, which is emerging right now. Companies would want to structure their own data, structure the way applications are architected. So for them, infrastructure as a service is the best play. Companies who are somewhere in the middle want to use the best of the software, but want to keep ownership, best of the hardware, but want to keep ownership of the software with them. For them, platform as a service happens to be a good choice. And the last, and my favorite, if the companies just want to consume the software, then software as a service is the best option for them. Some of the popular companies in, as I said, infrastructure as a service remains Microsoft Azure, AWS, GCP, which is Google Cloud Platform. There is Oracle Data Center, there is Alibaba Cloud, etc., etc. But in the market currently, AWS and Azure, as we speak, have the maximum market share. Not even Google, so Google comes third. First is Amazon Web Services, second is Microsoft Azure, and Google comes third. In terms of software as a service, yes, there are multiple software vendors who provide this particular offering. Salesforce is the most popular application when it comes to software as a service. So what they do is they provide this application for use. And the end customer doesn't really have to worry about where it is hosted, how it is hosted, and so on. Moving on, how information technology and cloud computing benefits us. So, say in terms of communication, we spoke about internet and connectivity, how they are relevant in today's business. So again, if the resources are placed on the cloud in some virtual data center, then the way to access them would be through some kind of connectivity, correct? And that connectivity has to be internet. So if cloud computing has to be successful, if the new age technologies have to be successful, then you need a very good and robust form of connectivity, and internet comes at the forefront of that, right? So internet as a backbone for any kind of technological advancement is absolutely prudent, right? And everyone and anyone with internet access can access information, share their views, opinions, as you can see on the slide. More importantly, even the new age stuff. So if I talk about, say, Internet of Things, right, where you relay the sensor information from the different sensors onto a centralized platform. Now that happens through some kind of connectivity medium, right? It could be narrowband IoT, which is again a spectrum, but finally the communication happens over internet, and hence I say that until you have good internet, you cannot have things like cloud computing successfully run, right? From printed emails and manually shifting to multimedia exchanges, internet is at the forefront of everything. Today's world, we send and receive emails. Most of the communication, confirmation, proposals, contracts, etc., etc., happens through the internet. Now, a very fascinating thing that is coming across is earlier companies used to enter into contracts, and these used to be physical papers signed on stamp papers and then vetted by legal attorneys. Now, what is happening is there are certain tools available, like things like, say, DocuSign, CLM, where these contract documents or the legal paperwork gets stored. This paperwork gets then digitally signed, right? Now you see the advancement that is happening. So earlier, where you used to have a big paper trail, now that particular need of maintaining a paper trail goes away. Everything gets stored digitally, gets accessed digitally, and it becomes very easy for anyone to find certain things in a record, right? Say you have a legal contract and you want to find certain terms. Say if it's a 100-page document, rather than scanning everything, I mean, you could just do a control F and look at or search key terms. So it becomes that simple nowadays. And as I said, at the forefront of everything, you have the internet. Moving on, looking at the cost-benefit analysis, what has happened with the advent of cloud? As I said, because things have moved to the cloud, cloud comes with some very creative cost structures. Now, the reason why I say creative structures is because there are certain cost models which are offered to the customer. So let's take a step back and see if the customer wanted to, say, procure some kind of a software or wanted to deploy a software. So what the customer would do is speak to the IT guys, get an understanding of what kind of server is needed, route through the server hardware vendor, etc., and then go to the procurement and finally procure the hardware. Now, what is happening is, in this particular case, the company has to spend a amount of money upfront in terms of procuring that server. Now, this particular term is called CAPEX. I don't know if you know this term, but capital expenditure or CAPEX is something which is spent upfront to procure an asset. Now, in this particular case, the server is an asset. So in the books of accounts, you would see a capital expenditure and server being put there as an asset there. Now, what cloud computing has done is customers or the end users do not need to procure the servers. Now, we all understand that. We spoke about it a while back. What happens is these servers get stored virtually on the cloud. More importantly, from a cost perspective, what these cloud vendors do is they don't really offer the server as a CAPEX to the customer. They say that you can use the server on a pay-as-you-use model, which means the more you use, the amount of money is spent only on your usage. So assuming that you've used the server only for, say, 5 days in a year, right? So you pay the amount of user charges only for 5 days, right? So how cool is that? So you pay only for your user charges. So that is one of the cost analysis or the cost benefit that cloud computing gives as compared to the physical or the age-old technologies. And hence, you see cost effectiveness as one of the key benefits when it comes to cloud computing in IT. right? So let's look at these. Information technology has computerized business processes, automated ways in which things are processed, making them highly efficient. So that is one. And again, cost effective. We spoke about it. With globalization and underlying principles of virtualization, the communication advancements have facilitated the outsourcing of various services, freeing business from the space and resource constraints. So what has happened is, if you no longer have a requirement to store a physical server on-premise, which means the space that is required to store that server, that goes away. So it's a huge cost benefit for the company. And mind you, for organizations which run enterprise applications, it is not just one server. It's a plethora of servers. So if you see, multiple organizations have in-house data centers ranging from somewhere between, say, 200 servers to 500 servers, depending upon the scale. And these are huge space in itself. Now, so space is one cost. But importantly, to manage that particular asset, you need precise air conditioning, you need rack space, you need other systems. So say things like air conditioning, you need to have not a normal air condition, but you need precision air conditions. You need to have complete security, isolation, smoke detectors in place, and a different form of fire separation. Because if it's a data center, I mean, and because your IT equipments are out there, like a server, storage, load balancers, routers, etc., etc., you cannot have fire or water sprinklers in case of a fire, right? Unlike our homes, you need to have different fire separation systems. So it's huge amount of investment when it comes to putting these kind of resources on premise. And what cloud computing does is that, because everything moves to the cloud service provider is responsible for managing this thing. And as I said, this comes at a huge cost, right? As in managing the infrastructure on premise. So this goes away, which gives cost benefits to the end customers. Adoption of IT has also increased the productivity, leading to higher profits and improved working conditions. Now, we saw that during the COVID times, what has happened is people started accessing these central systems remotely. Some people from home, people who are critical resources had to come to office if they needed certain things in office. But it's given a lot of flexibility for the end user to access it anywhere, right? Now, work from home is no longer a concept which is found in the books, but it's probably seen in all job descriptions nowadays. Companies prefer the hybrid working style because it gives greater flexibility to the end employees, but even from the company's perspective, it gives a lot of savings in terms of the office space, again, air conditioning, etc., etc. Because say if earlier it was say a 200 people office, the company kind of say shrinks it down to 100 user office and comes up with a rooster system. So say half the people to come on Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and the other half to come on the alternate days. So you get a lot of savings, and at the same time your productivity gets enhanced because you're working from home, you're working from remote offices, and it gives good benefits to the end employees also, right? Because you are connected through the internet to the office platform, again securely, right? And greater flexibility because the work gets done, no longer it needs you to be physically present. Large capital investments in mainframes became feasible with outsourcing opportunities, leading to round-the-clock utilization and significant gains. So as I said, with the advent of cloud computing, the capital expenditure kind of goes away. And even if, say, you enter into outsourcing agreements, so what does this mean is you let some third party take control of some of the operations. So that is outsourcing some key operations. Say from a bank's perspective, there is a software. You pay some amount of money to a IT vendor who manages the system for you. So these are outsourcing contracts. Now, even having the servers as part of the outsourcing contracts is possible, right? So then the need for the capital expenditure goes away. So increasingly, companies now enter into managed services contracts rather than saying outsourcing contracts. These are more of managed services where some IT vendor or a system integrator, as they are popularly known in the market, they take complete ownership of the software, the hardware, and ensure that these services get delivered to the end customer, bank in this case, at a particular uptime guarantee. So they will even put their neck on the line saying that we will ensure that you get, say, 99.999% availability. And a contract would be framed in a way that it is written that the SLA or the service level agreement is 99%. In case if the service level breaches, then they are liable to pay those penalties, right? So the point that I'm making is the capital expenditure that was required kind of goes away, and more businesses now move to the operating expenditure, right? The virtual desktop infrastructure reduces the expenses by over 60%. And again, we saw the example of a bank, how it leverages the virtual desktop virtual desktop infrastructure, and because the systems get stored centrally, which means you need only a centralized server, a higher and a powerful server, by the way, but still a centralized server to process the data, which means you no longer need those CPUs in every workstation. Now, imagine a situation, a IT company that has, say, 2,000 or 5,000 workstations. Having a centralized desktop computing, which is a part of the desktop virtualization, it helps immensely, right? And that's the benefit in terms of cost that is listed here on the slide. Again, with the virtual desktop comes a good leeway where you could have virtual desktops again coming from the internet. So the centralized computing, which was stored, say, in one of the data centers, maybe that could be moved on the cloud as well. So then the footprint of infra on-premise absolutely reduces, and you get to use this as a service.